Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today is October 17th. Today we're going to be talking about improvement on Strat Chat. What's up, guys?
Hey, what's up?
So, unfortunately, we had planned to have Jack Attack here with us, and we were all set to go. But due to some circumstances beyond our control, he is unfortunately not able to join us today.
Bad face.
So we'll unfortunately we have to apologize to all the viewers for advertising that he'd be here. Hopefully, we can get him on at a later point to catch up all the points we missed today that he wanted to talk about. But yeah, so the topic of the day is player improvement, player mentality of being a primary focus of that. So before we get into the really nitty-gritty details of the stuff I know Teo really wants to talk about, let's just get the simple, relatively easy stuff that nobody's going to disagree on out of the way, shall we?
All right.
So first things first, ergonomics. We can start with that. So, from what I understand about ergonomics and from what doctors and sports practitioners and so on and so forth have talked about, when you're playing a game, the number one rule is that your monitor should be at eye level, and that you shouldn't be bending your neck to look at the monitor, especially if you're going to be sitting for extended periods of time. And your arms should be at kind of like a 90-degree angle. So, like, your arms are kind of at your side, and your forearms are just kind of straight out to the mouse and to the keyboard. So you don't have to have your arms raised or lowered. And it doesn't really matter if you're doing a standing desk or a sitting desk. You basically, that particular position is kind of the most important thing you can do to avoid a repeated stress injury.
Yeah, that sounds more or less correct. Like I was a piano player for several years, and obviously we're doing a lot of the same thing where we're sitting in one place and like have to sit at like a perfect angle and all that. And so that's more or less the correct way to sit as a pianist as well, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and if you don't do that, you will hurt yourself. Like I have tendonitis quite commonly because for years I didn't do that. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
and the people who haven't suffered that pain or hurt that pain or felt that pain don't really understand just how bad it hurts. It's debilitating. When you get an injury like that, you can't play anymore at all, really, whatsoever.
Yeah, mine isn't too bad, but I cannot play ST2 for or really any game that requires APM if it starts hurting. It's not too debilitating, and I can't really play guitar either if it starts, but yeah, you have to be careful and whatnot.
Yeah, I have the same
And that's what
problems.
we agree with.
And healing those injuries takes a very, very long time.
Yeah,
So
there's not much you can do it other than just resting a lot.
And this is important to player improvement because if you're going to sit there for long enough to and take it seriously enough to want to get better at the game and compete, you're going to want to make sure you're physically he healthy and able to do so. Also, make sure that you don't sit for too long at any one point in time. I seriously injured my back sitting too much. It was a big part of why I suffered the two ruptured discs in my spine that I'm had to have surgery for recently. Don't sit too long at any one point in time. Get up every once in a while, whether it's after each match or every two matches or whatever you got to do. Get up and stretch. Maybe do a little bit of exercise after each couple games. I know there was a program a while back where people were getting up and doing push-ups after every match, or and then they do worse exercises if they lost or if they got cheesed or something or so on and so forth.
I try to get up at least once an hour. That's kind of my rule.
Yeah, if you do once per match for like a couple of minutes before you start your next game, and that's also good to clear your head for your next match after a loss and to give you a little more time to think about what happened. We'll get into that a little bit later with regards to improving from a loss or dealing with it, but just taking a couple of minutes off to make sure you're physically going to remain healthy is very useful and very important in general. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk about mechanics for a few minutes before we get into the really fun stuff. So,
define mechanics because it's really hard and it depends a lot on even the game you're playing.
Yeah, okay, that's a fair request. So mechanics, as I would define it, refer to your ability to execute what you intend to execute. So it's basically how good you are at doing what you're supposed to be doing. Missing clicks or misclicking in things is a mechanical error. Not being fast enough to do what you intend to do is a mechanical error. Putting your unit to the wrong position is not a mechanical error. You made a decision to put them there. That's not a mechanical error. That's just a strategical error, or a tactical one.
What
So,
if you're not fast enough to make a decision quickly?
that's more of a
Well,
mental error, I think,
that's a mental
because.
error, which we'll get into. Mechanical errors are physical errors, mostly dealing with hand-eye coordination or your hand to keyboard, hand to mouse, etc.
I guess it's not being able to force field Guardian Shield Blink and Storm at the same time, for example.
Oh, the Korean pros are all complaining that they can't do it.
Don't know. I literally just
Too
saw
manipulative.
91 destroy a Terran doing that,
Or you can just
but
stay move, because that's
right,
what protests do, right?
that's all you need. A couple force
Okay,
fields.
so mechanics basically are just implementing what you intend to implement. So there are a lot of different schools of thought on what the optimal setup is, mechanically speaking. We're not going to sit here and try to tell you what the optimal or the worst is. The reality is that, like archery or any other sport activity of any kind, such as baseball, where some people tell you to bend your knees and other people will tell you do whatever feels comfortable, the reality is do whatever works for you. If having a particular hotkey setup like the core works for you, great. If it doesn't, do whatever feels comfortable. Just know that it is technically more optimal if your left hand can easily and quickly reach every hotkey that you need, because your right hand is on your mouse, or if you're left-handed rather, your left hand will be on your mouse. Make sure all your hotkeys are reachable by your right hand, or whatever it is you do.
Well,
So whichever hand is not controlling the mouse should be able to reach every hotkey without having to stretch too far.
I have one question though. So what do you say to newer players who are like, "Oh, I just it doesn't feel comfortable for me to use camera hotkeys. Like I can't use camera hotkeys and use normal hotkeys at the same time. Like I can only use like four hotkeys max."
You have
You can
to
re
add things one at a time. So, for example, first maybe you start using only one army hotkey and you try to get used to having a camera hotkey in your main and natural. Then maybe you add a third camera hotkey for a proxy pylon, then maybe for your third, then maybe you add, but you have to do that one step at a time. If you try to do everything at once, it will be awful.
It really depends
That's
on
my
the
idea.
individual, because people learn in different ways, and that's very important to remember. Everyone has different learning abilities. Some people are more kinetic, some people are more visual, some people are more audio. They're learning better on hearing things and hearing cues. There are a lot of different ways to go about improving your mechanics. In general, I found that the best way to improve your mechanics in the fastest way for the majority of people is to do something that's only slightly too difficult for you to keep up with. If it's too
Which
hard for you
is
to keep up with, you will be improving by trying to reach it. If it's something that you can easily keep up with or even reliably keep up with, then you are not improving. You're just kind of making yourself steady.
You're refining, I think, at that point, but
Yeah, that's a
yeah.
generalization of what I said of adding one thing at a time. Because if you add one new hotkey, for example, then it's reasonably easy to keep up with it.
Yeah, just make sure you're not ever letting yourself get comfortable until you believe that you're at the level you want to be at. Don't ever let yourself get comfortable with your mechanical setup and what you're doing mechanically until you believe that you don't need to improve it any further because you're good enough. For some people,
Or you
for people
choose
who want
to
to go
focus on
pro,
something
that yeah, for people who want to get pro, that's when you're competing with other pros on a regular basis. And then it's up to, talking to other pros and figuring what to do. But for the majority of people who are not planning on getting pro, you basically just want to choose the general level you want to play at, and then you just make yourself you're sure you're at that level. Mechanically speaking, a lot of grandmasters are not mechanically sound. You can easily get into grandmaster with lousy mechanics if you make up for it in other areas. And we'll talk about what the ladder rankings really mean a little bit later.
Teo, don't you know that guy
But
that's in Grandmaster without
yeah.
using hotkeys at all or something weird like that?
Wait, what?
I don't know of anyone who's ever made Grandmaster without the use of
Or
hotkeys.
maybe was it just
I
not
do
camera hotkeys?
know someone who's made I do know someone who's made it into low platinum without hotkeys.
It's still pretty impressive, I
But
guess.
you can't make it. You're not going to make it into way up in the ladder or wherever it is you're trying to get to without hotkeys at all.
I don't know,
You just can't be
Mr.
quick enough. Even Galzer uses hotkeys.
That
Was a
Also, Chris
discussion
would.
years ago. If you look
Yep.
at the Daily 100, Day9 says that when he first picked up SC2 Brood War, people are actually debating whether using hotkeys or clicking with the mouse was better at when it first came out, because it was the 90s and people couldn't play games yet.
But I mean, once you get used to hotkey usage, it just so I guess the general gist with the mechanics is pick something that feels okay to you, and then reliably push yourself a little bit constantly to improve in it. Don't try to do too much at once, or you're going to overwhelm yourself and you're going to fail at a lot of things and not really get any better. But don't do anything that you can manage easily until you've pretty much decided where you're going. So if, as Teo said, that can be adding an individual hotkey to your setup, to your control groups or whatever, one at a time. So instead of having all your army on one, you might spread it to, one and two. And then next time you'll and then once you get used to that, you can add it to three or whatever. Or it could be as simple as mixing in camera hotkeys or just no longer using that select all army button that exists. Which, frankly, to be honest, I don't think I've ever used even once. Because I was in Masters well before that button was introduced, so I got used to just not having it, and then I saw no benefit to
Oh,
using it. So,
the mass army one.
yeah, the
Select all infantry units.
I think that's a trap,
That
honestly.
fucked up my key bindings, because F1 always was my proxy pylon, and then when HOTS was released, it tried going to the proxy pylon and selecting my army at the same time, and I had to change it.
Honestly,
I
like
was angry at that.
I think that button is like the absolute worst thing in the world for newer players because they get so reliant on using it. I've met a lot of lower league players that get really reliant on using it and they don't actually have any kind of grasp on using hotkeys at all. And so I just straight up tell them to delete it from their hotkeys because I think it's
I
horrible.
won't do that expressly because there's actually is one feasible use for it. In studying a lot of replays, and for a while I was on a competitive team, well, a semi-competitive team at any rate, with a lot of Grandmaster players on the team, and I would help them review their game, their replays and stuff. And one of the biggest, most common problems is that people would lose track of some small groups of units. They'd have hotkeys, and then they'd like re you know they'd go put units in production and change their rally points. Especially Terran players, I found, will occasionally lose track of small groups of Marines. And other such units, and just leave them around the map, or you'll see a player spawn like a bunch of Phoenix, and then just forget about them in their base at some point in the game, and they'll lose track of their units. So that button can be useful for finding all your units if you've lost some, and don't have the time to look for them. But that's kind of something that only really happens to better players, where it's problematic. It's not something that typically happens to low level players. I found that low level players tend to be a lot better at remembering where they left their, units.
Really, I feel completely the opposite way. I feel like lower level
Yeah.
players, they're not watching their mini map, and so they lose
Well,
units all the time.
I mean when they once they learn to use hotkeys and once I don't mean bottom level players. I mean like low to mid level. They'll tend to like use hotkeys and put everything on their army, and then they tend to be very careful to make sure everything's always hotkeyed and they just don't lose. I mean it really depends on the individual, I suppose.
I guess, yeah.
I think the situation, going back to the select all army, the situation where it's most useful is for Terran players when they're rallying bio across the map. That's like the only situation where it's useful, like really useful. But then I feel like you should also have a separate hotkey for your actual army. But
Yeah, I mean,
I
on
don't
the
know.
topic
Like,
of just
I feel
camera
like
hotkeys.
we've been doing this for so long. Like, even going back through Brood War, like we have professional players that didn't lose all of their units in Brood War, in spite of only being able to like select 12 units at a time.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean
I
that
think.
was
I think I don't think it serves any real good purpose.
I
It's
can't
not a super
remember if
important
it
button, no.
was. Nazgul or Legionnaire who didn't hotkey his army, but he would
That was
hotkey
Nazgul.
only his
That
buildings? Was it Nazgul?
was
Okay.
Nazgul. That was Nazgul, yeah.
Okay.
He would hotkey only his buildings just to improve his macro,
Yeah.
so that he could, and then he would just always just be watching his unit, so he wouldn't have to go back to base to look,
That's pretty smart.
in Brood War, because you only had single building selection, etc., and so on and so forth. So,
Yeah. Well, I mean, in Brood War, since you can only select so many units, usually like you just hotkey the most important ones anyway.
yep. But on the subject of camera hotkeys, plenty of people make it to Grandmaster level without using camera hotkeys. They're not mandatory by any means to play the game. And I went a very long time and reached low Grandmaster, high Masters level pretty reliably without using them. They're not essential. But if you're going to go pro, you need to learn to use them because they're an extra advantage that your opponents will be using. And they're extra hotkeys you can have to mark places on the map. And it is not bad for you to have them by any means.
I think they're really useful, and I use them for a bit, but when I switched to using them, I found that for a bit my minimap awareness went to shit. Because if you don't use them, the way you move around is by clicking on the minimap, so you automatically look at it. Whereas when you first get used to them, but you're not used to looking at the minimap because yes, not because you're moving around, you end up just not looking. So
Yep, that's
I
one of
feel like they are
those.
one of the hardest things to switch to.
Yep, that's one of those things that it's just adding that one next element that makes everything a lot harder, but is a step
Yeah.
you need to take to really improve mechanically. But for the basic part, and the most important thing in general is just do a little bit at a time. Make sure it's a little bit harder than you can ordinary that you can reasonably handle. So that way you have something to work towards and you get practice doing something that's hard. And then as you get used to doing it, then add the next step. Don't do too much at once or you'll be overwhelmed. And don't let yourself get comfortable doing one thing and only one thing without adding more or you'll stop improving at all.
Right.
So that's pretty much it for mechanics. There's not really much strategy to it, really. It's just knowing what you need to do to improve. So in general, it's just minimap awareness, getting supply blocked. So just looking to the bottom left and the top right of your screen, rather than focusing on the middle of your screen too much, except during engagements.
Yeah. Well, do we
Another
want to talk
thing
about
to
micro at all?
remember, in a bit, I
Okay.
think.
All right.
Another thing to remember about mechanics is they naturally come with time. And that is also like a baseline for every game. As in, if you've played since you were a kid, it's really likely you'll have better mechanics than someone who maybe started playing when he was in high school or whatever.
That's true. Yeah,
It just
I
counts.
think mouse accuracy is a big part of that, and especially in the games that we play, because like I noticed there's a huge difference between people who have good mouse accuracy. They can pick up just about any computer game and start doing pretty well mechanically, just because they have that kind of baseline of just being accurate with their mouse clicks. Whereas people who are a little bit sloppier with their mouse clicks, tend to have a bit more difficult time picking things up.
Yeah, and it's also just being used to using hotkeys. Simple as
Yeah,
that.
that too.
Yeah, it's mostly mechanics are mostly muscle memory, really.
Yeah.
You just have to train your muscles to get used to the behavior. It's the same for anything. It's like riding a bicycle. Once you learn how to do it, you don't forget, but
Oh,
you can
by the
be a little
way,
rusty sometimes, but it's not something that you lose.
secret for people who want to improve their mouse accuracy, just play a shit ton of Minesweeper. That game is amazing. I played Minesweeper like an hour a day for like probably about a month, and my mouse accuracy improved a lot.
Yep.
And then he
Also,
won with force fields
having
for the
and
first time.
I do want to point out having good equipment does help, but
Yes.
it doesn't help much.
It
Um,
depends on the
having
equipment you start with. I used to have this shitty cracked mouse pad, so my mouse would actually get stuck in the cracks and I would use force fields on storms. That's probably not too bad.
That's
pretty
But
bad.
then,
Like
yeah.
that's
Then I
pretty
got
terrible.
the Team Liquid Razor one, and I was like, holy shit, I can force field now, woohoo! So yeah, it
So
depends on how bad you start with.
everyone loves to have a gaming mouse, and they are much better than non-gaming mice for gaming. They really are much better. The issue is if you're not very good in general, it's not really going to improve your performance much at all. to switch.
Yeah.
And same goes for mechanical or gaming keyboards. They're nice and they are better, absolutely without question, are better than, you know, the basic stuff you could otherwise have. But unless you're already at a certain level of performance and just want an extra edge, they're not going to make any real difference for you, and they're not any sort of a silver bullet for the problem that you're facing.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be honest, I
However,
have.
it is a good thing to get them early and get used to using them if you're going to use them at all, because you need to be used to the equipment you use, which is
Yeah.
why when you see pro players, they always bring their own keyboard and mouse rather than using what's provided to them. You want to be used to
Changing
the equipment
keyboard
you're
and
using.
mouse is awful. Like when I got my Razer gear, I was terrible for 2 weeks because I couldn't do
Yeah, I
anything.
was completely blown away when QXE played that one match. His mouse stopped working and he just randomly switched mice to continue playing the match. The
Yeah,
fact that he was
impressive.
able to even play at all after that point, because when you play and get used to an individual mouse for so long and pick up another one, your mouse accuracy just goes to shit with a new mouse.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest, every time I get a new mouse, like my wrist starts to hurt and like I get really tired because I'm like trying to focus so hard and controlling it. It's so difficult to have break into a new mouse or a new keyboard or whatever.
Yeah, so having good equipment is very useful for your mechanics because it's better equipment. But don't expect it to be a silver bullet, and make sure you have plenty of time to get used to it before you actually try to be competitive with it. I mean, if you're going to go ahead and replace all your equipment now, don't expect to be good with it for a while. I mean, there's all sorts of adjustments and stuff you can make, but the feel of it in your hands is going to be unnatural for a little while. You're not gonna, it doesn't feel right until you get used to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
DPI on the mouse, it's not super important. It's nice to have. It is absolutely beneficial to have a higher DPI mouse. But I mean, you can make it work with almost anything as long as you're used to it.
I mean, it also really depends on the size of your monitor and all that stuff, but
Yeah, there's.
generally, I tell people to keep their mouse sensitivity on fairly low. I think a lot of people fall into the trap of like, oh, this is a new gaming mouse that goes up to like 56K or whatever DPI or
56K.
whatever 6K
What?
whatever 5600 and they set it all the way to the top, and you know they can move the entire screen in like a tenth of an inch or something like that, and that actually kind of messes with your mouse accuracy. So I tell people to kind of keep it fairly low so that it takes about like maybe an inch or two to go across the entire
I
screen.
mean, again, just like any other sport, it's do what works for you, do what's comfortable for you. If you have an easier time with a high, sensitivity, then great, do it. There's nothing bad about it, as long as you're careful not to, injure yourself or hurt yourself doing it. But so it doesn't really matter that much. But DPI is mostly relative to your resolution, of your monitor, and there are some other things. So just in general, when it comes time to buy new equipment, do your research. Don't just listen to one opinion, and certainly don't just listen to us because it's going to depend on what your needs are as a gamer. So make sure you do your research, you ask around, and you investigate the products in general. And don't just look at
However,
one source and listen to one advertisement for an individual product.
you should buy the Team Liquid mouse pad. Yeah.
That will make you better.
Hashtag Team Liquid.
That's essential.
I have it on good authority from individuals who cannot be named that having a Team Liquid mouse pad will triple your MMR in less than a week.
Also the chair too, right? You gotta get the Team Liquid chair.
Your seating, I forgot to mention this, is super important. As I mentioned before, make sure your head is level with your monitor. But make sure you are sitting comfortably, and while you are sitting, you do not have your back bent. You want a straight back. Even if it's uncomfortable at first, you need to get used to sitting with a straight back. Bending your back puts a lot more pressure on your spine and can make sitting a lot more dangerous. I suffered a pretty severe back injury. I don't want anyone else to have to go through that. The pain is extreme. It's
Yeah.
excruciating.
I have a quick anecdote. I had a friend who was on drumline, and played the quads, and he said that like he screwed up his back when he was in high school because instead of during breaks, like you're supposed to stand with like your back straight and your sticks like at this, and this is like a solid position. But like he would always just like lean down, and as a result, like he ended up with a whole bunch of back problems later on in life. So the important thing is just keeping your back really straight and solid, because that will really help with a lot of issues, and will keep you from getting any kind of back injuries later on in life.
Yep. All right. So I think we've covered most of that at that point. So let's go on to the more interesting discussions.
Yep.
So let's start off with what ladder means and what ladder is. And what the ladder it, it, well, the ladder is commonly misunderstood as to what it really means. So basically, a league on the ladder is not an indicator of how good a player you are at all. It does not indicate it. It gives you a general vague notion of approximately where you might belong, but it is not an indicator of your individual skill.
Yeah, see,
And
because
an example of
I
that
was
is,
always a
I think
Grandmaster player, but like I never got into Grandmaster, but I was always a Grandmaster
what I mean by this is take any two players that are in the same league in the same MMR and have them play each other. Okay. One of them might have exceptional macro skills and not know how to control a goddamn unit at all. And I happen to know certain individuals who can't micro squadrons for the life of them.
I've seen it firsthand.
But
Yep.
strategic,
I
but have reasonably good decision making. And the other player might be Marine King Prime, who can micro his Marines like a freaking god, but makes terrible decisions at random moments in time. And they might actually be approximately equal in win rates against each other. But that does not mean that necessarily that they're equally skilled, or that because every individual aspect of the game has a completely different set of skills needed in this game. In order to be excellent at this game, you need to take them all together as a giant cohesive whole, rather than
Yep.
individual pieces. So the best players, the people at the way top, like Life, are good at everything. But if you're below the top level of pros, there's always going to be some area you can improve on, and even life can improve in some things. So the notion that, the leagues or the ladder represents your skill level is inaccurate. It's you
Yeah,
Galzi, for
for
example, made it to Grandmaster regularly, only cannon rushing every single game, and anytime he tried to not cannon rush, he would lose outright every time. He couldn't even execute a proper four gate, which was one of the simplest strategies there is, but he reliably made it to Grandmaster because his cannon rush strategy was so good. He was so good at cannon rushing.
Dude, some of those cannon rushes are just like a thing of beauty. Using the geyser as high ground vision. Oh, it's beautiful. Because you can't cannon rush a Zerg.
And does that mean he's a bad player? No, I mean he did reliably make it to Grandmaster, but and I mean, there's nothing wrong with a good old cannon rush. It can be annoying, but it's nothing wrong with it. But does that mean he's a great player? No, but he can't do anything except that one strategy. No, and he frequently had to change his username in order to avoid being blind countered by opponent who figured out who he was and knew what he was
Nice.
going to do.
What a player. Yeah,
So.
for me personally, when I played really competitively, the most fun I had, and I guess the best approach I had to ladder, was actually joining a team and playing Clan Wars and using ladder as a practice tool to just get ready to face the random shit people would throw at you, because people will prepare idiotic snipe builds for Clan Wars or whatever, and ladder is very useful for that. And then maybe you can compare yourself to your teammates or whatever, or how well you do in tournaments. And that feels like a better way to look at your skill than just saying I have X amount of points in diamond or whatever. And it's more fun.
Okay.
Yep. So, I mean, go back to the Galzi notion, for example. He had ridiculously good mechanics for his cannon rushes. He executed them spectacularly. If you asked him to do anything outside his comfort zone, he completely fell apart and didn't know what he was supposed to do. And he couldn't micro units other than probes, so he couldn't make up for it with micro, because the only thing he ever practiced was microing probes. So you wind up with this, if you focus on the one thing too much, as I mentioned, the comfort zone thing. You wind up not improving and failing to, get but being able to do anything else. And width of strategy
And
does matter, but
one thing is, for some things it's fine. As in, for example, in PvT, I always preferred Templar builds over when they worked, over Colossus builds. So as a result, whenever I tried a Colossus build, I would fail fucking horribly because I couldn't execute it because I never did it compared to the amount of times I went Templar builds. And that's fine because I still had a decent PVT, I still had a good win rate and whatnot. I just could do 3 or 4 builds instead of 10.
Yep. So
Like,
take
it's
so the
fine to
ladder
have
is.
flaw to have strength. What I'm trying to say is it's fine to have strengths and weaknesses, and it's fine to focus on certain things because you prefer them.
Right. So the point of this is that the ladder is not an indicator of skill. Your rank does not mean how good or bad you are. What the ladder is good for, and what it's excellent for, is as an improvement tool and a measure of your personal performance relative to where you used to be. So you can see personal improvement in your play by watching by once you hit that 50% win rate and see, getting stuck at a particular ladder rank, and to get an estimate of where you actually belong relative to other players. You can watch your, you can see that you're getting better as your ladder rank starts to climb. So rather than being a measure of your skill, it is a measure of your ability to, it is a measure of your own personal improvement and performance improvement. So when, so it's, before we get into the nitty-gritty of, you know, what you should actually be doing strategically to improve, it's important to recognize that the ladder does not mean you are good or bad depending on your rank. It simply indicates the general region of other players you should be playing against and your own personal improvement. And that's really all it's good for, is a measure of your own personal improvement. So, you know,
More or
that's
less, I
about
agree.
it.
I
Don't,
feel like
don't.
I feel like it gets hard though when you end up reaching like a plateau. Like I've known a lot of people, including myself, who have sat in diamond or low masters and have like never really been able to like move any further. So
I think
what's the point
that's
of
a.
playing like, you know, for 6 months at a time and not improving in terms of like not going up a league or not getting into higher MMRs?
Well,
Yeah,
thanks for
for me
asking, Chris. We're about to
personally.
get into
Yeah, for me personally, it was playing in a team, and like the goal when I played in a team was winning clan wars and going far in tournaments and beating my practice partners that I couldn't beat a couple months before or whatever, as opposed to just having X amount of points in Masters or going for GM or whatever, which I never made. That felt way more satisfying than, hey, I have 200 more points in Masters than last season. It's a different kind of goal, and I think it's more fun and more rewarding. It's not easy, but it's another thing to consider if you feel like you're stuck.
Yep. So, in general, so the first thing I want to establish before we get into the actual procedures of how to go about improving your level of play is to note that what it means to improve is very di and what you need to do to improve is very different for a low level player, a mid level player, and a high level player. And I use those terms in a very vague, general sense, not a specific sense of like your bronze, your low B, or your silver, your low B, or your gold and platinum, therefore your middle. I don't mean it in that sense at all. So these are very
Everyone
vague
sucks
general.
anyway.
Well, everyone except like life.
Everyone except
Best.
Koreans is bad. Yeah,
Yeah, pretty
exactly.
much. That's what
Everyone
happens
else
when
is
you
a little better
grow up.
player.
Like I remember being
But.
a platinum and like making it a diamond, and I was like, oh my gosh, now I'm good. And then like it hit me like a year later, I'm like, oh my God, I am shit compared to like the lowest masters player, and they're shit compared to grandmasters players, and they're horrible compared to foreigner pros, and they're horrible compared to Koreans. So that means I'm absolutely the worst player on Earth.
And the funny thing is, you could probably destroy anyone else on Earth or almost anyone else at any given RTS,
Yeah,
even though you're like
it's
platinum in
StarCraft is a hard
SCG.
game, but at any rate, so for a low-level player, so let's start with low and we'll work our way up to what to do to improve. So, as we mentioned before, the general gist of improving is to do small incremental increases that are difficult for you, but not exceedingly difficult for you. So they're hard at first when you try to implement them, and then you just have to get used to implementing them and then keep adding more. So for a low-level player, a good idea is to take a well-known, well-respected, solid, stable build and just do that every game in the matchup you're playing, in the specific matchup, and have and just practice it a lot. The number one rule for playing competitively, as far as I found, is you need to be able to execute your opener 100% near perfectly, basically, without having to think about what you're forgetting or what you're doing with executing the opener. It needs to be muscle memory. That applies at the pro level.
Yeah, I agree
That
with
does not
that.
apply It does not apply for lower level players, but you should be able to do it very well without having
The
to think
fine
too much about the
opener.
build.
Hold on, the fine opener.
Opener as in your build order.
Well,
Yeah,
builder.
but up to
Getting your
what
building,
point?
getting your buildings down at time, getting your units out at time, getting them out at the right times, not,
Yeah, but
being off by 2 seconds can make a big difference.
are we
And
talking
getting a
about
pile on down.
getting to two at the right time as at the time, or just getting, I don't know, your Robo down at the same time? Because those are very different. And it's one thing that's really important is if you choose for your go-to build a really well-timed, refined macro build from, I don't know, some Rain or whatever, you are, as a low-level player, you will never, ever, ever get close to his timings 15, 20 minutes into the game. It's not going to happen. Maybe even 10 minutes.
Right.
I mean the opening build, and when I say opening build, I mean the one base to taking a two base type deal. I don't mean
Okay.
anything more complicated than that.
I mean,
Early game
fair
stuff.
enough.
To be
Fair enough.
honest, it's all an extension of the same thing. I mean,
Yeah.
you start out with build orders, like, you can be brand new to StarCraft 2, and if you can just get like a basic build order of like 9 pylon, 13 gate, 14 gas, 16 pylon. If you can get that up to like 20 or 30 food, like that's solid. That's good enough for you. That's great. But as you get to the higher levels, like even when you get towards like the like Grandmaster Pro region, then you have these long overarching builds that are meant to hit like at like 15 minutes, and everything is done perfectly in order up to those 15 minutes. But it's all progression, I think.
With lots of adjustments on the fly to account what their opponent is doing, but
Right.
that's really complicated stuff to make sure you're doing that right. So
Yeah.
we're going to skip that for now.
Well, what I'm saying is it's something that you build up to. So like you start small and you but it's all part of the same
Yeah.
progression.
So
Yeah,
maybe
so
what he's saying is when you first start, maybe you focus on the first 4 or 5 minutes, then on the first 7 or 8, then on the first 10 or 12, and so on.
I wouldn't even say that. I'd say take the initial build you're getting used to. Get used to that build and then stick with that build for a good long while you practice other things and then come back to changing builds a bit later. But
Yeah, that's fine.
more
That's
or less
fair.
too.
The basic gist is you want to make sure you have a reliable opening to execute. And it doesn't have to be the best opening that exists, it just has to be a decent one, because at that level of play, having a decent strategy is more than good enough to beat other players if you outclass them in other areas. You don't need to have, you can't. Pro builds are There's a lot of thinking that goes into pro builds that doesn't work at low level play. Even if you executed the build correctly, there are a lot of things that go into it that don't necessarily work. Korean builds, which are typically the pros we look to for builds, oftentimes will cut a lot of corners in designing their builds to suit the general trends of play at that level. Like just to
Yes.
take risks because they're not expecting their opponent to do X attack at minute Y.
The perfect example of this is PvT. If you look at pros in PvT at the pro level, they will always cut units at like until the medevac timing hits, and then they'll have a burst of production. If you go on ladder and diamond, people randomly attack with random amounts of bio at any other time before medevacs.
Yeah, you end up with like really weird like eight marine timings just walk into your natural and kill you and you're like,
Yeah.
"What the fuck? Why is this here?"
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the best example of something that works at the pro level because a pro can just kite shit with his stalkers perfectly anyway or whatever. And things that and that same thing may not work as well on ladder.
Yep. So find a build that is reliable, stable, and reasonable for each matchup. And I say for each matchup because, frankly, trying to do one build in all three matchups is not going to work because the different matchups do recall for different builds. And this next piece of advice goes all the way up to the pro level, and not just for level players, but when you're learning a new build that you are not so absolutely perfect with that you don't have to think and you hit all the benchmark timings perfectly, it can be very beneficial to go into AI matches and just practice the build for a few minutes.
I don't. Yeah,
Noni,
I'm a.
pros like Noni have been known to, right before a tournament, just sit in AI matches for a while, just practicing their build. This is not something that is specific to low level players. Even pros benefit from it.
I don't think you have to. I personally never practiced much against AI. Maybe I would run a build like once, but yeah, that can work.
I don't know. I was a big fan of AI games. I guess it just depends on the player. Some
Yeah.
people find it better to just go on ladder and just practice Playing against people. Other people prefer, I guess, to refine things and work on that way.
But remember the overarching rule, everything is different for every individual. Do what works for you.
Right.
But it can be very beneficial for a lot of people to do the AI matches just to practice their build order. So once you have a build order down and reasonably executed that you don't have to think too much and you're not missing pylons at the opening, as a low-level player, at that point, you pretty much just want to focus on the basics. That is to say, keeping your structures producing, trying to pay attention to your army and watch the mini-map and your supply. These are macro basics. And you don't really have to do any sort of fancy micro or anything at this level. Micro can be useful if you think you can manage it or want to learn it or practice it. Going into things like micro tournament maps online can be useful for learning skills. But the important thing here is to get your APM up to a reasonable level so you can actually take the time to micro because you're quick enough to do it. And the best way to increase your APM is to remember the things you're required to do and do them. If you
I
forget to
think.
check your supply and put pylons down, you get supply blocked. Remembering to get supply blocked requires that it naturally includes getting faster to place the pylons down on time, along with the other things you're doing. So just remembering the basic macro mechanics can make you a faster player.
Right. You have something to say too?
Yeah, I think the most one thing that I want to discuss is choosing your build, because this is where people disagree a lot with my opinion, or with other people's opinion as well. Because the common knowledge, I guess, or the common advice is pick a macro build and just macro always, because macroing is better than all-inning. That's kind of, or rather, that's kind of how people see it. The idea behind that is if you're used to playing 30-minute, 20, 30-minute games, you will have to make more decisions, and on the really long run, you will become a better player because you have more complex decisions to make. The problem I have with that thought process is when you first start, for one, you're clueless and you're not competent enough to execute a complex macro build. And also, I don't think it really makes sense to have to go for these more complex and long-term strategies. I think it's a lot less overwhelming and possibly more fun, depending on the player, to just know when you're going to fucking kill somebody and doing it properly. So maybe you start with a simple, I don't know, Blink Cullen, because I'm Protoss. Then maybe you go for something that's harder to do, like a Soul Train or something else. Then you add a Colossus timing and whatnot. And with that, you start from really simple builds and you go into more complex stuff. Yeah, Mentrain, for example. All game, every game, that works. So I think it makes a lot of sense to start with simple plans, which is a quick all-in, go for a more complex plan, which may be plans, which could be a slower all-in, and then go into the macro games. That's my personal opinion, because at
Okay.
first, macro games and complex decisions can be extremely overwhelming. And there's also no sense of guidance. Like, what happens with lobbies in a macro game is they sit there for a long time without actually making decisions because they have so much to do already.
Yep, so I'm actually gonna mostly agree with that, with some caveats. For a low-level player, there's, like I said before, don't try to do too much all at once or you will overwhelm yourself and you won't be able to pinpoint mistakes and correct the mistakes you're making. If you can't see what you're doing wrong because there's so much going wrong and you can't fix it and you're not going to improve. So trying to play a 30-minute game when you're relatively new on a regular basis is not going to help because you will be doing so much wrong, you'll never figure it out. And at that
Yes.
point, but on the other hand, you shouldn't be trying to do an all-in every single game at the same timing very early because you won't be practicing. While you will get some mechanical practice doing that, you won't be learning any sort of decision-making whatsoever involved in that, really. And while I'm
I
not
think
trying to
it
push people to
depends.
making complicated decision making, having a certain amount involved early on so you can get a feel for the notion of strategy, and so that the game doesn't get outright boring because you're just doing the same thing every single game, and having fun is important, even while trying to improve. So yeah, recognizing that you can kill your opponent deciding to all in at a low level at minute 10, for example, perfectly acceptable. Go ahead and do that if you think you can do it. As long as you're getting, so, which is why I was careful to say early game build order is the thing to work on for low levels. And then slowly add more
Yeah,
things on.
fair. Fair enough. The thing is,
Don't try to force yourself to play long games unless the game calls for it, but
you're unless the game calls for it, in my opinion, I'm talking about both, I guess, mid and low level players, whatever that means. I don't know, like I don't know, I don't see that working very well, as in it's really hard to just m actually make those decisions at first and have them make sense.
right.
With some, and it, the idea of you're not making decisions kind of depends on the build you go for, because okay, if you're going for a 1-base 4 gate, you're not learning shit either. You warp in at 4 at 5:45 and then you kill everyone in platinum or whatever, gold, or you don't and then you lose. But if you have, say you do like a zealot timing into a soul train, then you do have more decisions, because you have to decide when do you warp in, when do you not warp in, how do you set up your proxy pylons, how many mortals do you go with, and whatnot. So there are more, it's slightly more complex. And the other important thing is, I think if you start with the mindset that one only improves with macro games, or one should focus mostly on macro games,
Oh, absolutely
you
not.
just
You learn
and
mechanical skills and a lot of you get a killer instinct from all ends, right?
yes, and the other important thing is you get less frustrated when you get cheesed, because you just think, okay, he all in me first, whatever. If you think only he will only improve if he, sorry, if you think I will only improve, I will mostly improve going for a macro game, and then someone chooses, you're like, okay, this guy's a piece of shit who just wants easy wins. It's easier to think that, and that leads to people being really toxic. And it can be frustrating. It can keep you from practicing when you could practice in a healthier way. So I think it's an important point to make.
Yeah, I think
Yeah,
I wrote a thread a while back called How to Plan a Strategy. It was pretty popular on Team Liquid. Where basically I just talked about different types of strategy and like how you would come up with a strategy based on a problem and put it together. But one of the main ideas of that was that, cheesing or doing like a 1-base or 2-base all in, that's just as much a strategy as, okay, I'm gonna kill my opponent in like the super late game once I have like the ultimate army, and then I can just steamroll over him. So it's one of those things where we get in this kind of horrible mentality of thinking that like only people who play for the late game are good, and cheesers and all in people who do all ins are like horrible players. But actually
thanks, Chitra.
But actually, those are valid strategies in and of themselves. And what makes them really good, I think, for newer and lower level players, is that they're smaller plans. They're a lot easier to digest. You know, like either I'm gonna kill my opponent at this time, or I'm going to lose. Like, that's the definite end of the game at like 10
Okay.
minutes, as opposed
Yep.
to
So
20
a
or
good
something.
tip is, what would Idra think of this? If Idra would get angry, you probably shouldn't be angry for something. That's a good way of looking at things.
All right, so that actually covers most of what you need to do as a low-level player, is picking a build order for each matchup, practicing it, making sure you get it down reasonably well without having to think too hard about it, so which can take a lot of time, and then just play games doing that, and do it in, from, and just slowly develop the and just pay attention to your mini-map and pay attention to your supply depots and just try to spend your money. And you can control your units. And if you want to all in at minute 10, well, do as long as you're doing the rest of that, fine. Go ahead. You don't have to play a 30-minute game. You want to all in at minute 6 because your opponent is super vulnerable because he triple expanded? Go ahead. Just
Or
work on the
because
build
you feel
order
like
and.
it. Let's be.
Or
Or
because
because
you're
you
having
feel
fun
like
and
it.
you just want to shove Marines down his throat.
Exactly.
Let's be real. We've all enjoyed the super fast stim timings. They're fun. So yeah, just whatever you feel like doing, go ahead. As long as you're working on those things, you will improve to a reasonably well. So for basically you'll get to a mid-level play reasonably quickly doing that, once you figure out, the rest of that, once your build orders are down. When you get to mid-level play, and I'm not gonna give you a ladder definition because that's meaningless for what mid-level is. So after you've got your build
I
orders
think
reliably down.
we can define it as when you feel comfortable with your build order that you chose.
When you feel like
Let's
you
go
can
with
execute
that.
your build order without thinking about it and you hit all your benchmarks, that's really all you need. in order to start really thinking about strategy. Because this game does have a pretty significant skill requirement in that sense before strategy even starts to matter. But once you have a reliable build order that you can execute without thinking too hard, strategy becomes your primary goal at that point. So at that point, you want to work on incorporating more hotkeys, like we've talked about earlier. You want to work on making sure your mechanics are solid. So work on implementing camera hotkeys or whatever else you want to do with that. You want to work on not necessarily extending the game because you don't have to play longer games even still. There's no mandatory requirement that you play long games. But you want to start working on incorporating more of a wider variety of unit compositions, and making reads on your opponents. And at this point, you really want to focus on trying to control the map, is I think the most important thing to think about as an improvement for mid-level players, because it's a skill a lot of high-level players never learned, and therefore lose a lot of games on. I know a lot of mid-masters to low-masters players and a lot of high-diamond players who have no idea how to have map control or use map control when they have it, have no idea how to spread vision, and therefore lose to a lot of stuff they shouldn't be losing to.
Right. So what you're saying is basically at this level, the most important thing is just learning to scout and pay attention to what your opponent's doing. Basically moving from PvE to PvP.
Right. To controlling the map is the most important thing, I think. And looking at the minimap to use vision. Spreading pylons or overlords or putting marines at key points to watch things and supply depots. Making sure you know what's going on in the game at this point. So then you can actually make strategic and informed decisions to respond. So like you said, scouting. Knowing when, figuring, learning how to put units where to shut down certain movements around the map. So knowing, for example, on Xel'Naga Caverns, the Tasteless Secret Hallway can have a counterattack path. So putting a marine further out ahead so that you can see the attack coming to counter it.
Yeah, I think that's when scouting sort of starts. Like, that's when people start having builds rather than just going one base Thor Battlecruiser. And so that's also when scouting starts playing more of a part. And not necessarily scouting for specific things like, oh, he has X amount of tech labs and X amount of reactors, so he's gotta be doing an STD pool or whatever. But something as simple as, is he expanding or not? Or does he have a lot of workers or not? Does he have gases or not? Those are more basic crits that one can make
How
that
do you...
start playing a part.
I think the question that's difficult for a lot of people who are coming up is when they're scouting, what are they looking for? Because I think a lot of people will just they'll just go scout with a probe or something at the beginning of the game and have no idea what they're looking for. Is
Okay, so the
that good or
decisions.
bad?
Okay, so that's bad, obviously. You bring the question up because you know it's bad. Leading questions.
Well, actually, but
It's
go ahead.
bad because if you're scouting without knowing what you're looking for, it's not useful to be scouting. So you just obviously it would be better not to scout. But that's more of a higher level thought process than a low level one. For example, there's a player who used to play this game called Zhao or Zhou. I can't remember how to pronounce the name properly. It's SJOW, and he beat Life in a major
Joe,
tournament. He was
yeah.
Zhou. He was a good player, but he would never scout early because he knew he wasn't going to change his build order based on what he scouted. So why bother scouting? He wasn't going to make any major changes to his play if he scouted, so
There's
why bother wasting it? At the mid
something to be
level.
said about that, which is it's not just changing your build order, but also feeling ready or being ready to defend an attack. If you know an attack is coming, you are more likely to land the force fields to have to just micro better or whatever, rather than just being, oh shit, he's attacking me and kind of panicking.
Right. Correct. That's why I'm saying that that is a something you should not even think about as a notion of should I be scouting here or not, until you are a much higher level. In general, at a it, when you're approaching the mid level of play or you're a low level player or you're a mid level player, you should be scouting, period, and looking at what you see. Now, typically speaking, around this time, you probably are not going to know what you're looking at first when you start doing this. You'll see something and have no idea what it means. That's okay as you're learning. There's nothing wrong with that. That's normal. Learning, a lot of learning what to re how to make reads is about practicing and then losing. It's about scouting, seeing what you see, and then dying to what comes after. And a lot of it's experience, and a lot of it's thought process, and a lot of it's watching the replay. What does it mean if you walk into your opponent's base in a ZV, you're a Zerg player, you send an Overlord into your opponent's base, it gets there on habitation station, and you see your opponent only has one gas geyser in his main, and has expanded. What does that mean to you? To me, that would mean a man train. But if you've never encountered or lost to a man train before, you will have no idea what that is you're looking at. You'll go, this is weird. He's not going to have any gas.
And then you will get
Maybe he
one.
has a maybe he has a hidden maybe he has a hidden base somewhere or something. Like it's you just don't know what you're looking at. And that takes practice. There's no other way to learn what you're to make reads other than to practice and experience. You no one can tell you how to make reads. You just have to practice it.
I think, I mean, just forcing yourself to get vision out on the map, also will do wonders for you. Like, you may just randomly send like a marine to go scout around the map, just around the corners for no reason, just to get vision on the map, and then discover a pylon with like zealots warping in, and you're like, "Huh, that looks like an attack. I should probably get ready for an attack, huh?" Because you can end up spotting a lot of things that you didn't realize that you could that would happen before.
And the number one rule while you're scouting is try to limit how much time you spend looking at your base. As he said, having vision is useless if you don't actually look.
I think for scouting, if you don't know what the fuck is going on, you can reasonably easily boil it down to is he getting gas, and if so, where is it going, and is he using minerals to expand or to make units? Those are the very basic things you can. So you should look at either is he mining more gas than me, or a lot of gas for his race, depending on the matchup, and B, does he have more bases than I do, or than he should have, in case of Zerg, who will always be one base ahead.
That sounded like some salt.
But I mean, it's just in general, the only way to really learn the details of what you're looking at is to practice and to watch your replays and try to figure out what happened. And just to get experience and practice doing it. You can't, it's not a skill that anyone can sit down and just tell you how to do it and you'll do it well. You have to play it. But the way you can practice making reads is to make sure you have vision and make sure you look through your vision and use it. And if you're, and the reason you have to wait before doing this until you've executed your build flawlessly without having to think too hard is because it takes a certain amount of APM and practice and muscle memory with regards to your build order before you can afford to take the time to not look at your base without ruining your build order. So it's why scouting needs to be learned after being able to execute at least a basic build. Because if you try to incorporate scouting before you can execute your basic build well, you'll ruin your build every time you try to scout. So in general, if you can scout, make reads, and you can execute a build order without getting supply blocked, and you can spend your money so your money is not skyrocketing, you are already a mid to high master level player at that point on ladder. If you can do all of those things, you will be winning a lot on the ladder. Those are a lot
Another
of skills.
thing.
Those skills are things that a lot of players at Masters don't have yet.
Another thing to remember is that no matter what build you choose, there will always be a strategy that kind of kills you. Like, there is always a build order loss, or you will always get lucky and get a build order win.
I
So
don't
it's
necessarily.
unnecessary to over-obsess over what do I do against thing X and to feel the need to have a perfect reaction against everything, because there is really likely to be something that kind of is ahead against you.
The thing is to remember is that a lot of pro players like Rain, who is one of my favorite pros, who is Protoss at any rate, he would frequently do a safe build every game. And we talked about this before in one of the other shows, one of our other episodes. He would frequently do a safe build, know that he was going to be falling behind because he wasn't taking risks, but know that he was so solid as a player that he'd still probably win even from behind.
Although
It
that
is
kind of
very it
depends.
is. I mean, he lost a
As
lot
in.
because his opponent got too far an advantage, but his strategy, that was his strategy.
Not necessarily. Do you remember his final against DRG in his very first OSL win?
I
I
remember him
think that
deciding
was
that he
one of.
wasn't so much. I remember him deciding that he wasn't so much better than DRG that he could just play safe every game.
Is that the weird
No,
one
that
where you like
was.
immortal all in?
No, that was one of the greatest Protoss series ever. What happened was he did safe builds in the first two games, and it was 1-1. But even in the first in the game he won, he did an awkward timing because he went with two Colossi and plus one instead of three or four Colossi and plus two, and he just kind of so he mind game DRG in game one, got fucked in game two by Infestor Broodlord. In game three was an Ohana. He actually went robotics, showed an Immortal. And then just expanded, and the RG was sitting there, afraid of a soul train, and he didn't
Oh
scout.
yeah.
And then 2 minutes later, he still showed up with a three base all in. He did that build again on Daybreak, and then in the last game, DRG thought, okay, against this Robofuzz trait, I'll go Muta. And Brain was already ready with the adjustment, which was going DTs and doing the same all in with the DTs controlling where the Mutas were going. It was one of the most mind gaming glorious Protoss series ever. And
That's
it wasn't
sick.
Safe at all. So this notion that Brain always plays overly safe.
No, he doesn't
not
always. It's just his most common mode of play. He certainly doesn't always do it.
Yeah.
Especially not
but
in long series, because you'd get hard countered in
that,
long series.
That final was so Protoss and amazing. I was so happy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Protoss lover.
yeah. Yep.
At any rate, it's, you know, you can go with the same build against. You're not going to be blind countered on ladder until your MMR is so high you're only playing the exact same people over and over and over again. So yeah, you can accidentally get blind countered occasionally with a build, but if your build is a fairly general catch-all build, which is the sort of build I would recommend that people learn for their first few builds, you will at worst be a little bit behind from build order rather than dead from build order.
Yep.
And playing from behind is an excellent way to improve. You can learn a lot from playing from a disadvantage. In fact, I would suggest that for most players, most of the time, you learn more from playing from a disadvantage than you do from an advantage. You learn how to play more efficiently. You learn how to what trades you can and can't take rather than just overrunning your opponent with huge amounts of stuff because he can't keep up. Playing from an advantage is oftentimes very useful to learn because, frankly, if you don't know how to close out a game like Thorzane, you won't know how to leverage your advantage at all.
Right.
That's a useful skill to learn is how to actually win a game that you have a lead in because a lot of people will throw leads. But I mean, playing from behind is not a bad thing while you're learning. I mean, it is in a tournament. You don't want to, if you're in a tournament and you really have to win this game, you don't want to be playing from behind.
Right.
But while you're on ladder and learning, and the game really isn't all that important because ladder matches don't matter. And until you're a grandmaster playing to get into WCS, ladder games really don't matter at all. Just learn from the experience.
Yeah, I think that brings up a good point. When people get frustrated when they play ladder because they're not winning or whatever like that. But when you think about playing to improve versus playing to win, like you really should embrace losses when you're learning because that's the best way to learn. Is, you know, you get mauled by some kind of like ridiculous two base all in that just completely takes you off guard and kills you, and you look at the replay and you go, oh, so when he does this, that's when he's going to do this. I could have just easily scattered it at 7 minutes and I would have been able to stop this easy. I think it's one of those things that. I feel like we should embrace losses more often when we're playing ladder.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you usually
lose more
from a loss than a win.
Yeah.
One thing to be said is looking at a playstyle as in greedy / aggressive / safe can lead to being as toxic almost as the idea that macro is better than all-inning. As in sometimes you'll play a macro game, the other guy just double expands and you'll get fucked. And you'll be like, oh, he played bad because he played greedy and he didn't do a catch-all build or whatever. That's also a risky thing, and it's also something you have to keep in mind, just like with all-ins.
Yep. Don't get... When you're working on improving your own play strategically, don't ever get angry at the other player or at the game balance. I wanted to bring this up a little bit later, but I guess Teos brought it up now, so I'll point it out.
And if you do get angry, listen to Disney music while you're playing, so you will not be...
No, that's Teo's strat. Doesn't work for me.
That would not work for me at all.
Don't. If you find yourself getting angry, take a break. First of all, the first thing to remember is this is a game. You're doing it for fun. Unless you are already a professional player who makes a living off this game, you are doing it for fun. Don't take it too seriously when you lose. You can only learn things from losing at this point. It's not that big a deal to lose. And if you're starting to get angry at the if you're starting to get angry, it's going to make it harder to make real decisions and to think and to improve because you'll lose the ability, you'll lose perspective, you won't be able to think properly anymore at that point. So take a break, step back for a few minutes, go do some push-ups or go get a soda or whatever it is you need to do to break a break. Doesn't have to be a long break; just take at least a short break before you get into your next game if you're starting to find yourself getting angry. Also, it can be very useful when you're getting angry to go into the replay and look to see exactly what happened. Because a lot of the time when you get angry, you don't actually understand what happened, and that's what, in large part, is what's making you angry. Even if you don't realize that's what's making you angry, a lot of the time, that's what's making you angry. People blame balance all the time for losing or winning or so on and so forth, or when things happen. I mean, whether or not that is a true statement, whether the game is balanced or not, is pretty irrelevant if you're trying to get better as a player. It won't help you get better as a player to blame the game balance. You have no control over the game balance. The game is what the game is. You can only work with it in the sense it is. If you are complaining that the game is unbalanced, your options are deal with the imbalance and pretend it doesn't exist so that you can actually improve your play and learn to deal with it, or switch races. Those are really the only things you can do at that point.
I switched races several times, didn't help me.
No, it usually switching races for a more imbalanced race very rarely actually improves your level of play, because it turns out most of the time when people complain about imbalance, it's not actually imbalanced.
Actually, I actually do have a pretty good history of accidentally switching races right before they get super imba. So like
That's still not funny.
I switched so like in the Heart of the Storm beta, I played mostly Zerg, and well, I played random, but I played a lot more Zerg, and then like 6 months, 8 months into Heart of the Swarm, I decided to go back to playing Protoss full time, and that's right when all the Protoss gods like came out of the woodwork, like deer and stuff, and started winning everything. And then when I switched to Zerg, that's when Swarm hosts got ridiculous and Zergs were winning everything. So it's coincided with wins, maybe not OP, but wins for that particular race.
Okay. So anyway, yeah, so going back to what we were discussing before we switched topics a little bit, just to get us back on track. So generally for the mid-level player, what you're looking to do is learning how to make reads and how to respond to them and how to make decisions at that point. Once you've got your basic stuff down, like the most basics of basic stuff of, not getting supply blocked, understanding that you need to be spending your money in producing units, getting your build order down. At that point, you want to focus on learning how the game actually works, how units interact, how everything expands. And the best way to do that is to scout, make reads, and then try things. And when they work, great. Try to figure out, occasionally go through your replays and figure out why they work. And when they don't work, great. Try to go through your plays occasionally and find out why they didn't work. And that's how you learn to make better decisions, is through practice and experience. There is no substitute, there is no guide you can read on how to that will be better than the experience of learning it for yourself. There's no better way to do it than to just play it out. So once you've got past that level, that is to say, you understand more or less the mechanics of the game, you understand interactions of units and making decisions, and you can learn to make basic reads on a regular basis. You scout, and your scouting is useful and affects your decisions and build order perhaps a bit, and all sorts of variety of that matter. Then you're starting to look at some really high level stuff at that point, which incidentally most master players don't actually know, because you can easily get to masters with just a solid build order. At this point you're really looking at playing really interesting StarCraft. This is when you work on refinement, where you start to learn more builds and try to get them down flawlessly, and then so that you have a variety of options that you can play. For specific maps, you start to look at individual maps and try to learn, what's better on this map versus what's worse on other maps, and you try to abuse terrain and other tactics like that nature. You try to figure out, very, very individual little tidbits of information like this Tempest. Like, if I put the Tempest at this particular position, I can just barely reach the command center. And by being here rather than 2 feet to the right, it's just fast enough to get out of range if they blink stalkers under it. And all sorts of other little tiny tidbits like that. That's really when you want to just start focusing on as many details as possible, and the game as a whole really opens up to you. So at that point, really, it's just about adding on whatever you feel like adding on, and improving new builds and new strategies and everything, and trying to be careful not to lose whatever else it is you've gained.
I
Just
think.
be very careful not to lose what you already have obtained at that point. Don't forget your basics.
And I think that's the level where you really have to focus on the specific things, like on Stalker Micro or I don't know, whatever more specific things. So, for example, if you want to work on your Stalker Micro, maybe it's fine to proxy gate or do Stalker timings a few times. If you want to focus on Tempest Control, whatever, you just play super for really
Hashtag
long games.
Tempest Control.
Yeah, I was
Whatever.
thinking of slow most
Hashtag
games
Ready
when you actually do have to microdose
Build. Okay,
things.
fair enough, fair enough.
Oh no, dude,
Yeah,
I
but the Roddy
actually
build
did
just kind of.
practice. I actually did the Roddy build for practice and it worked. My Tempest Control got way better.
I tried doing that, but they always died to the Oracle and the following four gate. That's why we did
I got the
it.
other Roddy build.
I tried to play a
I tried
macro
to
game,
practice
but
my
I
Tempest.
failed.
I tried to practice my Tempest Micro, but they were dead before I had the Tempest out. Why? Oh
Protoss
God.
problems.
No, but I mean, it's at that point, yeah. I mean, you know how to execute a build order. You have plenty of practice with the build orders you've been with the build order that you've been doing in the matchups. You understand scouting, at least to enough that you understand the basics of what it means to scout and what it means to make reads. Go ahead and work on in discovering your own builds or using other builds now, for the purpose of practicing. If you want to practice Stalker Micro, like you said, do a two gate, do a proxy two gate Stalker Rush, and learn that build. Get it down. Whether you want to practice it versus AI as a ladder to get the build down correctly, that's fine. It doesn't matter. Get the build down, and then just practice your Stalker Micro by using that strategy a lot. That's what you want to do. Go ahead. That's exactly the correct level to start doing that stuff and experimenting. And by doing different builds and different strategies in your games, and by the way, I recommend picking a strategy and sticking with it for at least, like maybe 30, 40 games before you switch to another one. Don't just do one strategy each different game. Unless, of course, you're not interested in improving and just want to dick around. You can learn a lot about the game doing that. And when people say mass gaming is the best way to get to Grandmaster and go pro, this is what they're referring to. They don't just mean randomly playing games with no objective and no intent to improve. They mean just playing a lot of games and learning things because they're playing games. And the best way to learn things is to have a thought process behind why you're doing what you're doing. Now, one thing that wanted to get brought up, and I think is important before we talk about anything else, is the notion of thinking about things. While you're in the middle of the game, you do not have time to stop and think about what your next move is. You have to think on the fly. That means a lot of the time you will make bad decisions until you have a lot of experience about what to do in a certain situation. So you will have a lot of losses when you encounter something new. That is natural, that's normal, that's fine. Even pros in the middle of tournaments will occasionally encounter something new and have no idea what to do. There's nothing you can do about that when you see something new. You just have to make a guess and hope it's right. After the game is the best time to think about what happened and what to do properly. And that's when you try to come up with responses and decisions about how to solve things or fix things, is after a match has ended, go back, take a break, come back a few minutes later after you've cooled down if you were upset about it, or if you're not upset about it at all, you can go right into a replay or whatever. And try to figure it out. Try to think about it and say, maybe if I encounter this before, maybe I'll attack a minute earlier, even though I don't have my upgrade done because he's very reliant on a more important upgrade on his end, or any number of other such things you can think about. So yeah, just do most of your thinking outside the game, not in the middle of a game, because you don't have time.
Yeah, the more you think in a game, the worse you play, I think. It has to be more instincts when you're actually in the game.
Unless you're Zest.
Unless you're Zest.
I
But
mean,
he thinks it's speed of light, so.
yeah, well, you can work through a lot of those things by also just being mechanically superior, I think. Like there are a lot of players who have horrible like in-game decisions but seem to get through with mechanics.
Hi,
You've just
Sue.
described like 90% of Korean pros.
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's important to yeah, just talk about how powerful replays are in improving. Just because I think that replays don't help you too much before this point of skill level. Like before then, like when you're first learning, they don't help you at all, really. And
They can
then,
help. They can help learn what scouting means, but
yeah,
other than that, until
but
you're at this level, you don't really
yeah,
learn
and
too much from
then
them.
they're helpful for like big picture things, like oh, when he has a gas and only one gas and expansion, that's a man train. But like we're talking about like replays getting to a point where you're literally studying the replays and going, all right, so he has like five Marines out at this time, which means I can probably Like, if I scout my stalker and he has 5 marines at that time, then he's doing this build. But if he's doing this other build, he only has 3. So like I can tell the difference between those builds, and I know exactly how to make this like slight variation with how my mothership core is moving around the map. Stuff like that. Really super fine things that I think really separates bad masters players from good masters players and grandmasters and even pros. Separates out the difference between pros.
Yep. And by the way, when you play a match against another player and you look back and see that there are 2 Marines missing that he should have, and then make a snap call to suddenly all in because you expecting some form of tech, and then you rush your like 3 Stalkers in and just like run right past the bunker and start blowing up his SCVs, and you wind up winning that game, you feel like a goddamn god after that
Yeah,
game.
that's true.
You
Yeah.
feel so freaking smart when you win, and when you and when you lose, yeah, you feel a little silly, but you learn something,
Yeah.
which is awesome. So yeah, I mean, it's just this is the sort of thing you do when you get to a much higher level of play when you've got all your basics down. You start refining little details and trying to experience more situations. This is the point at which you really should start thinking about trying to play long games occasionally as much as you can, if you can force them,
Yeah, this
because
is where long
so many
games really
players.
come in.
So, because this is where it starts to get to the point where you have a lot of decisions to make, which increases your odds of making poor decisions, which means that you practice making good decisions a lot more in general. And then you can go back to the replay and find the point at which you made the bad decision. And incidentally, when you're looking through a replay, find the first significant mistake you made and then stop watching. Once you've made one big mistake, that's all you need to know. Fix the first one you made, and then the next time you do, next time don't make that mistake. And then the next time you make a big mistake, you can focus on that one, etc. But don't try to correct more than one mistake at a time, or you'll wind up forgetting a lot of what you were trying to correct. So, as we said,
Yeah.
incremental improvement.
Yeah, also, this is the level where strategy really begins to matter, which is why longer games are more useful as a learning tool. I mean, lower leagues, lower games are useful, I guess, because you have fun, because maybe you get to make units you don't usually get to make or whatever. But they may not be as useful for improving and learning.
Yep.
A big mistake might be something, as somebody asked in the chat here. A big mistake might be something from forgetting to put your probes on gas right as your assimilator finished, so that you were 50, so that you were 20 gas behind getting your sentry out on time, and then a bunch of zerglings ran into your base because you couldn't force field. That would be a pretty big mistake.
But not having a zealot on hold position
Yeah,
would be a pretty
would be a
big
big mistake.
mistake.
That
A minor
sucks so
mistake,
much, too.
a minor mistake would be getting a pylon down half a second, like 1 second later, or slightly mispositioning a gateway so that that a unit has to walk around a little bit more to get out of your base in terms of your Sim City. And by the way, I forgot to mention, when you get to this level, Sim City is important.
Big city.
Sim City can be very important, and you want to base your Sim City on the individual maps you're playing. And this is the
Yeah,
sort of
don't
thing
be
you can do
Huck.
in. Yeah, don't just randomly throw your buildings willy-nilly in the same places every single time. Sometimes if you're expecting a Hellion drop, doing a different building placement can be hugely advantageous because you can limit the Hellion's movement. If you're expecting Widow Mines, you want open space around your Widow Mine, Mineral Mine, so your probes have more space to run away and spread out.
Yeah, you can more or less do
Sim
whatever you
City.
want as Zerg.
Yeah, Zerg, your buildings. There are some cool Sim City tricks for Zerg. One of
That's
my
true.
favorites
That's true. ZVZ.
One of my favorites is to surround your spire with other buildings so that it can't be sniped easily. Especially against Protoss. I've lost track of the amount of times people have tried to run DTs into my base and try to kill my spire as I'm going Mutalisk, and because I put buildings around it, they don't kill it in time with it before I get detection back and kill the Dark Templar. Like putting spine crawlers in key locations so that zealots can't easily hit them can make a huge
Yeah.
difference in your base defense.
Yeah. Or just
So
what nice thing for Hellions is you can put an Evo chamber behind your mineral line. That
Yeah,
helps a lot.
to block them from running behind the mineral
Yeah.
line.
Pretty straightforward.
Every race has Sim City tricks they can do to help with base defense and unit movement and pathing. And that's the sort of thing you also want to think about. So really, when you get past the notion of understanding scouting and understanding the concept of making reads, in the experiential sense, that is, you've done it before and know what you're supposed to do. You don't have to be perfect at it by any means. Almost nobody's perfect at it, really. Probably the best player at it is Zest. And he's not perfect. He's just very good. That's when you really just want to start thinking about every other little detail, just one thing at a time until you've got it all down. So that's basically the method of how you go about improving as a player. Don't
Yeah, that
do
sums it up,
this,
I think.
don't do this sort of thing that some people talk about of limiting yourself to making only one kind of unit at a time, just to learn how to make that, just to learn how to use that unit, because you'll that will result in not only a lot of frustration and a lot of loss of fun that you should be having. And by the way, if this game ever stops being fun because you're focused too hard on improving, take a break from improving for a little while. Don't ever let yourself get the game stop being fun for you and continue to force yourself to do it. You'll only make yourself miserable.
Yeah, I mean my advice is I just cheese every once in a while, like maybe every other game, every third or fourth game.
I used to just go into free-for-alls and do those for a while, and those were hilarious.
Yeah, or just doing
Yeah.
2v2 stuff like that. That helps a lot.
But or did I just play a different race and then just cheesed other people with a different race just so they'd know what it felt? But okay, so we covered most of that. So yeah, that's just how you go about improving. So I want to talk for a minute about copying pro builds and copying what the pros do as an improvement tool. So I said earlier, when you're trying to choose a build, you want to choose a bit generic, reliable, solid build that a pro has executed at one point or another, or that we got from watching the pros. But don't try to copy everything the pros do. You, until you're around the pro level or very, very good, you don't understand why the pro did it. And the pros have, and this is a big problem in FPS games as well that I see on a regular basis, like CSGO, where a pro will do something like jumping back and forth in one place real quick, for a reason, and then you'll see random people just in random matches trying to copy that, and they have no idea why the pro did it. It's not useful to try to just mimic what a pro did just because a pro did it. It does not mean it's automatically good universally just because a pro did it once, or even multiple
Yeah, I
times.
think yeah, if you want to learn a pro build, the best way is to get a replay pack and watch 10 or whatever, 15 games from that same pro. And it's also really good to know other pros that do similar styles and look at their VODs and how those builds evolve in the last however many few months that a build has been used. You can do that by going on TLPD and looking at pros' match histories. That's how I used to write my guides. Because that's how you see every professional game that's been played with that specific build. You can see all the situations they face and the adjustments they make. And that's much easier.
And if you want to
Otherwise,
have
if you
fun,
just look at a single game, you don't understand exactly what the build is trying to accomplish and what it can and cannot do and whatnot.
right.
So, yeah.
And if and I do want to plug real quick something that all three of us worked on. If you want to have fun, feel free to play Protoss and open up the Great Book of Protoss bullshit,
Yep.
and pick some builds there. That's a great way to have fun.
Right, where is it?
All of those builds work very reliably. I'm particularly fond of the PvZ blink all in bullshit. That one is hilarious,
Also
but
the PvZ
and the
tasteless
tasteless,
build.
yeah, the PvZ tasteless build. But yes, apart from that, for a minute there, and I think that was like our second most popular article ever
Yeah,
on TL
after
Strat. Yeah,
the most popular being the Wings of Liberty PvZ guide.
I'm gonna though. I'm gonna be the odd man out though and disagree with you guys on the pro replays, because honestly, a lot of what I've learned, has been all about watching pro replays and learning from them. I think that you can, I think anyone honestly can watch a pro replay, write down the build that they do, and like really pay attention to what they're doing, what they're scouting for, and why they're attacking,
Oh, you can absolutely learn a lot from watching replays. I'm not going to disagree with that. You can
and
learn
be
a
able to
lot.
mimic it on your own. Like
But what I'm
I think it's
what we're
really
saying is
horrible.
don't just copy what they're doing just to copy what they're doing because they're a pro and therefore it's good. If you don't understand why they did what they did and when they did it, then copying it is inadvisable.
Okay. I just want to make sure we don't get into like the I think it's a trap when people talk about copying pro builds versus like non-pro builds, because a lot of people will say, "Oh, you shouldn't copy pro builds because they're way too hard and they're too complicated." And like, you shouldn't do that because you need to focus on trying to learn more basic things. But I think if you look at a pro build and you see that it's a solid build, maybe you cross-reference it a bunch and you look at it and see what it does, and then you just do it anyway, like you shouldn't have a problem being able to execute it. Even at like a diamond master's level, like people can execute pro builds within a few seconds of the pro. It's not like it's impossible to do a pro build.
That's what you think, Chris. You should see how many players can't execute a build at those levels. But
Yeah. Well, I mean, it gets difficult when you play against other people, but like in a vacuum, you can definitely reproduce the same build.
Yeah, what I was saying is you can't really draw conclusions from a single game, is what it is.
All right. Fair enough.
I agree with Teo here. If you see something that looks really cool, like a like let me give you an example of a Protoss build that I used to try out. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who did it. It's on the tip of my tongue. The DT drops. Player's name started with a W.
Tails.
Oh, Tails, not Tails. Not W,
Yeah,
Tails. You're right, it's
MVP
Tails.
Tails.
You're right, it's Tails. Tails, I knew you would know the build, Tao. Tails, DT drop. Okay. He had three or four variations of the DT drop build that he would do. And it took me a long time of watching the game to figure out when he would use which variations and why. And it turned out that some of the variations were map. One of the variations was map specific. Two of the variations were individual player specific, and the other one was just generic DT drop build. There was, if you tried to copy one of the variations, which the variations tended to be more effective than his generic one, without knowing that he had done it for against specific players with the intent of defeating that specific player, because he knew it was something, because he'd studied that other player's builds and knew a weakness they had. If you try to copy that ladder, you're probably going to lose a lot because that player you're playing against might not have that specific weakness or gamble that the other guy's taking. And the map specific one, obviously, you could only do on that map.
That said, the Tails drop was amazing. When I wrote an article on that, the weeks after, the Terrans in my team were fucking yelling at me all the time because every Protoss was doing that build
You should have
and they were
seen how
fucking
much
bad.
you should have seen how much
What was
hate the TL Strat team got after the Great Book of Protoss bullshit was released.
Yeah, we got so much hate.
Yes. We ruined the ladder for weeks.
Oh,
It was
and the
great.
other guy too, didn't we did the Because We Can one, right?
Yes,
That one
that
also
was
ruined
so
ladder for a couple weeks.
It's great having this much power.
Yeah.
But in general, if you don't know why a pro did something, don't try to copy it. Instead, try to, as Chris said, you can use it, but try to learn why they did it before you use it. And you can learn why they did it by practicing it and just copying it and then seeing when it works and when it doesn't. It's kind of a bit slower than just watching the replays and analyzing it, but if that's what works for you, go for it. But make
It's
sure.
slower, but for some people, it's more fun.
Yeah, it can be more
So.
fun. So, I mean, again, do what works for you. So I think that covered most of what we wanted to talk about. Was there anything else you guys wanted to add?
One minor thing, which is never assume that a build is viable or not. You see lots of people saying this build only works until diamond or whatever. The truth is, in ladder, because it's best of one and because you face players only once in a while, and it's really rare until really high in masters to face people multiple times, basically any build can win 50% of your games. So if you like a strategy for whatever reason, even if it sounds silly, and you don't particularly care about playing super legit or focusing on improving and playing like Flash or Rain or whatever, just do whatever you want and don't concern yourself with something being viable or not.
Then there's also the there was one other thing I wanted to talk about that I just forgot about. I wanted to talk about the difference between improving your decisions in a series of games versus a ladder game. So let's say you've gotten up to the competitive level and you're going into WCS Challenger League, and you want to try to get into the Premier League or at least practice in the Challenger League to eventually get into the Premier League. The number one rule of thumb to remember is that a ladder strategy typically does not work in a series, and series strategies typically do not work on ladder. Just So you have to approach the thought process and your strategies entirely different. And I know we covered this in a previous episode, so I'm not going to say anything more about it than that. You can go back and watch our VODs if you want to know more about that notion. But just be aware that learning to how to play in a situation only applies when you're actually playing in that situation. When you're playing in a different situation, what you've learned is what the skills you need to apply can be entirely different. So the stuff we covered today is basic StarCraft and will apply to no matter what you do in StarCraft.
I mean, in a lot of ways, I think it extends to everything else. Like a lot of what I learned from StarCraft, extended to a lot of other things. Like I said that I was a music student for a long time. So I
Yeah,
learned,
music helps mechanically a lot.
yeah, but I learned how to practice adding, one thing at a time and slowly building up to larger and larger pieces. Things in the same way. Like I even used it for my job. Like I worked at a Zaxby's, which is a fast food restaurant. Like I used kind of like a mental checklist for drive-through. It's all kind of like the same kind of concepts that you can reuse for basically anything.
Yep, and I mean, just to cover mechanics again real quick. There's something here I want to put up on the stream here to show you how silly your mechanics can actually be that can still work. So this guy actually plays a first-person shooter game here. I believe it's Doom, doing some really silly, hilarious things. Remember, whatever works for you works in jet is good. Whatever works for you, but make sure it works well enough for you. This type of thing would not work in StarCraft, but. Do it. You gotta do what you gotta do.
What even is this?
He has replaced his equipment with toasters,
Why?
he's mechanically playing Doom with toasters.
Dude, he's tearing it up. Holy crap.
Ladies and gentlemen, mechanics.
Mechanics. All right, do we have any kind of questions from the chat?
Yeah, so
Snare Rider had a really good question earlier.
okay, so yeah, why don't we take questions from the chat? I mean, we could talk all day about improving because there's still a lot of stuff to cover, but
Right.
we've covered the important stuff. And again, at the end of the day, a lot of it is learning stuff on your own. Coaching, I want to point out, can help a little bit, but until you're really already at a fairly high level of play and have just like little nitpicky details to focus down that you just can't see on your own and you need another perspective. Coaching is not going to help much. As long as you understand the basic gist of how to improve, which was our main purpose here, you can improve without a coach and a coach won't help you.
All right. Snare Rider has a question. Any recommendations on Legacy of the Void builds to improve with, or should we just steal them from Heartless One?
So, why don't you take this first?
Heart of the Swarm builds are completely out of the window, so I guess if you want to play Legacy, you should just watch streams. As far as I know, there really aren't any good guides out.
So basically, just YOLO it and learn everything from scratch again.
YOLO it and watch streams because they're the second best thing behind replays.
Right. Okay. At least you
Yep,
don't have
so.
to learn like mechanics and stuff over.
Yeah, so it's my answer to that, because I've actually played a fair bit of Legacy of the Void, is nobody knows what builds are stable yet. The beta keeps changing and patches keep going out all the time. We have no idea what builds are going to be viable on release. There's no way to tell. Your Heart of the Swarm builds are out the window, so if you don't have a build yet, I would say choose something that is stable and safe and not necessarily great and just practice that. So you can always do a one gate expand, for example. That seems to be reasonable no matter what, is to one gate expand. If it turns out to not be reasonable in just you gotta just gotta adjust what you're doing. A one racks expand seems reliable. Hatch first is generally always reliable, except in ZvZ now. ZvZ is kind of a bit of a wonky matchup.
I feel like we're going back to the idea that like game plans start with like a super basic build order and like build up to like 20-minute thing. I feel like we're going
Yeah.
back to that. We're being reset as like veteran players of Heart of the Swarm, going to Legacy of the Void. We're like, I don't know. I guess I just like build a hatchery and then a pool. Guess that works.
But that is
I just build on
that's
that.
how it works, right? First, you figure out the early game before you can figure out the later game. It
Right.
goes for both a new game and a new player.
Right. I think it's funny that we're kind of being almost reset to StarCraft II infancy.
Yep, it's ironic for sure.
Yeah. So it's just the builds. Nobody knows what builds are stable, so they'll have to be invented still. What other questions do we have here? Okay, so Murmur made a point here that I want to address. So he points out that coaching helped him with the core concept that taking a faster expansion in PvT can actually make you safer than taking it later, because of the which is true in certain circumstances. It actually can, because you get the income earlier, which can help you produce more units, and it can allow you to get a defensive position at that base before you have to establish it. And that's something Zergs have known for a long time. Taking the third faster, even if you're not going to mine from it quickly, can make taking the third easier rather than taking it a bit later, because you have the creep down and you have the position.
Yeah, the creep is so important.
So that's something Zergs have known for a long time. That is absolutely true. A coach can help you learn stuff like that, but that's a bit more of an advanced concept that you don't really that isn't something that will really help you improve significantly until strategy really comes into play and you can make reads and make decisions. And for that, you really need to understand the basic concepts. And when I said scouting is the tool of a mid-tier player, I meant a mid-tier player. If you understand scouting and the concept of scouting and making reads and can know how to move around the map and take advantage of control of the map, you're already better than more than half the players that exist in this game. I see a lot of players in Master League who don't understand those concepts because they just do the same build every game and execute it reasonably well. So, I mean, obviously you can learn skills, like what expansion timings on individual maps without knowing how to scout. I would just argue that it's not nearly as beneficial as learning how to scout. And learning how to scout is a pretty core concept that you kind of need to know to really get anywhere in the long run. So keep asking questions if you have them. We have a question here about the Cyclone. You want to take that, John? Chris?
Honestly, okay, fine. All right, what do you think the direction of the Cyclone is going? So the most recent change was it's no longer, it doesn't target air until later, right? Is that
No, it so the most recent change from what I remember reading was that it does the same damage to ground and air now. The upgrade now does bonus damage to armored.
okay.
Like a lot of damage to armored. I think it's like over, if you manage to keep the lock on for a full 20 seconds, it does 400 damage.
Okay.
And it does like an extra 400 damage over the full 20 seconds to armored once you get the upgrade.
Okay.
So it'll kill almost any armored target if it has like a full 10 seconds to work on it or something.
Okay. So to me, what that says is, so they reverted the air changes, because a lot of people were complaining about how it made mech kind of it was impossible to open mech in basically any matchup because you had to get. Like a certain number of Marines to survive against certain things. So I think that was a good direction. And to me, I guess the armored stuff is trying to make them more viable in the late game, versus things like Ultralis and things like that. And I disagree that a fast light unit that doesn't cost a whole lot should be able to counter something like an Ultralisk. I think you should have to make something like Thors or tanks. Or battle cruisers in order to deal with something like that. So I think that part is a little unnecessary. I would be fine with just having Cyclones as just an early game unit. You make like maybe four or five of them tops, and then that's it. Like, I'm okay with that. So that's my opinion on it.
Yeah, the Cyclone to me seems like the latest change has been in order a late game quality of life, whereby it requires so much attention to use them in the late game because they're literally designed exclusively to be a kiting unit and nothing else. Not useful in a straight up engagement, but useful for kiting. It just seems like it's intended to make it so you don't have to pay as much attention to your Cyclones later to still use them. I don't really have an opinion whether it's good or bad because we'll have to see how it plays out and whether it's viable or not or how it works. I will say that having one Cyclone kill a carrier in like 6 seconds, is probably a little over the top. But in those, by the time that you get to that stage of the game where that sort of thing is happening, it's very likely that Protoss will have other options to shut that stuff down so that the Cyclone doesn't have 6 seconds.
Maybe, yeah.
It's really situational. It depends on, like I said during the hard counter episode, it really depends pretty heavily on the compositions in play because no units ever engage in a vacuum in real matches. So it's really hard to say whether it is actually going to be meaningful or not. So all I can say is wait and see on the Cyclone. So I saw another question here, which is specifically for you, Chris.
Right.
How does Roach Ravager Corruptor work against Bio slash Liberator? Is it just by concentrating, or is the Ravager DPS really that high to fight them straight up?
So working backwards, so wasn't it last episode or the episode before that we talked about that the Ravager DPS is really not high enough compared to Hydras, and you're really better off just mixing in Hydras at that point?
Yeah, it was because the reason why was because hybrids do more damage. The reason why the Ravagers were mentioned is because they range to hit siege liberators reliably is effective
So
without getting shot by the liberators.
I think it makes sense to have a couple of Ravagers in there maybe to fight the liberators, but honestly, if you're already having corruptors, you probably don't need the Ravagers, and you'd probably just be better off with Roach Hydra Corruptor, or Roach Hydra Corruptor Viper, I guess would probably be the most ideal if you could mix in two or three Vipers for the blinding clouds. Plus the super OP thing that it has where it just kills everything now.
Yeah, I generally agree with that. I think that's more or less accurate.
Right, I have a question for all of us. Who's
Okay, cool.
gonna win BlizzCon?
Oh.
Yes.
Now they put me on the spot and make me make a prediction. I don't like making predictions.
Bad.
Inevitably, I'm wrong because you can never foresee like what's actually going to happen.
No, there's no way. Like all these players
Like
are good.
last year I was predicting Zest because he was freaking on ridiculous fire and he'd won like every tournament of the year, and then he just got his ass beat. I'm like, God damn it, Zest.
I think it's going to be CJ Hero just to piss off Chris. I'll vote for that.
Whatever.
That would be a hell of a fun result, though.
He's not gonna win.
Can you imagine the epic tears of salt streaming down Chris's face?
It's absolutely not gonna happen. He's gonna get his
I
ass
mean,
kicked by at least Beal.
you know what? I'll say Hero too, because I'm pretty sure he's the top ranked player going into this in terms of points.
Whatever.
Isn't he? Am I
I don't
wrong about
know.
that?
I don't know. Part of me wants to say Dream because I just want Dream to win for no reason at all.
You know, I don't want to say Lilbo because I'll probably wind up cursing him.
Yeah, well, no, Little Bo's gonna lose in the first round. There's
And
I that's
I'm
my
99% certain that he's going to lose to life immediately. But
Yeah.
I mean, if he, can you imagine how amazing it would be if he just stomped everyone and just won the entire tournament?
Would be amazing, but it's probably not gonna happen. But
I think Zest is going to win again. I'm gonna call Zest again because, damn it, Zest, my man.
I'm gonna go with Parting. I want Parting to win.
It's either going to be Zest or Innovation, I think, or Life, one of those three.
Yeah.
Hero. I'm still gonna go with Hero.
Hero's not going to win. Hero's a piece of shit. He's not going to Oh, gosh. All right. Do we have any more questions?
Doesn't seem like it.
Not in particular. Jack Attack just joined us in the chat.
Yeah, he
Oh
unfortunately
well.
wasn't able to join us today. We would have liked to have had him on, but
It's
it's
okay.
good that he's here now.
Yeah,
So
next time.
if anyone has any questions for him, feel free to ask him in the chat. He did want me to mention something, so I'm going to bring that up now. I'm going to
Right,
put the
then.
link in chat here. Chris can try to post this up in the video if he can or whatever.
Sure thing.
So there's this tool here, which is a build order generator. I don't. It's not finished yet, but it's pretty close to being done, and it's still a work in progress. But it's fairly reliable. And this is the sort of thing you shouldn't use until you're already very good at the game, and you want to work on developing your own build orders, because you have have very specific reasons for why you want your build orders. But this tool can be useful to efficiently generate build orders that you hadn't seen before. So one of the ways you can develop build orders and understand benchmark timings when you've never built your own build before, is to use a build order generator like this, which can tell you the optimal benchmarks you can hit for your goal with your build order.
That's cool. Yeah, I feel like these sorts of things. I think build order apps are also really helpful for if you like don't play a race or like you don't know necessarily what the other person is doing. Like, you can plug in some numbers into something like this and come up with a build, a theoretical build that somebody would do, and kind of figure out what another race is doing, or if you're trying to like experiment with a build and you don't have the time to like load up StarCraft, you can just plug in some numbers and be like, oh, okay, cool, so at this point in time I can have these many units if I played this perfectly.
Yeah, the one thing to be concerned about with a build order tester, and the reason I don't recommend it for anyone below a very advanced player to use, is because it doesn't give you any context for the build. It gives you the most efficient and fastest benchmarks you can have and the correct order to hit the final outcome you input into the build order generator to get to the end result you want as soon as possible. But there are oftentimes reasons why pros prefer to do that, to reach that outcome a little bit slower, such as safety, or they want to incorporate a specific scouting route for the map, and a number of other context and important bits of information that the build order tester cannot possibly account, or generator, I should say, cannot possibly account for. So you need to understand things of that nature in order to understand how to use these tools properly. So it's a tool for advanced players, but it is a valuable resource. So just be aware it exists and that you have things like this. That some excellent members of the community have produced for your usage.
Yeah. I think that more or less wraps up everything we wanted to talk about, right?
Yep. Teo, question for... I want to have you answer real quick because somebody just asked. What would you say is the best way to learn to scout and read your opponent and respond correctly?
I guess it's to categorize things, as in tech, things that hit really quickly, things that hit really slowly, things that don't hit because he's expanding, and kind of divide things in broad categories, and then kind of work out the minor details eventually. That'd be my idea.
Okay, so why don't we make this last one a round robin question, Chris? What one thing would you suggest to people to do to or as advice for learning to scout and make reads?
Honestly, get comfortable with your build order and what you're doing, and then just literally just force yourself to think about getting vision on the map. You don't have to know exactly what all that information means. Just force yourself to just get information on the map. Like when I played Zerg at the beginning of the game, I would always make four lings versus Protoss and just split them over the map and cover everything. And that would, in the end, like that ended up saving me a lot of help with, like I was able to spot any probes that were on the map or any pylons. And like I would just walk up to the front of the Protoss base and be like, oh, there's an expansion. Oh, he has this building. It didn't mean a lot, but if you force yourself to just start doing those things, you can get quick information and in the long run, look at replays and find out really specific things.
All right. The piece of advice I would give you for learning to make reads and to scout is that you don't have to see something straight up to infer that it's there. One of the common mistakes people will make when they're learning to scout for the first time is to send units in to the enemy base and look for a specific building. Like, if you have an inkling that Dark Templars might be coming, you could walk in, you look for the Dark Shrine. Because if you find the Dark Shrine, you know it's coming. But you can still figure out that they're coming without seeing a dark shrine at any point in time. For example, if you know that at this timing, if they were doing build X, that they'd have, you know, say, hypothetically, three stalkers and a sentry and a couple zealots at this point, and you walk in and there are and the sentry's missing, and one of the stalkers is missing, you're like, well, where did that gas go to? What are they spending all that gas on? And then it says, well, okay, what's cost a lot of gas that he could have at this time? Well, he could have a Twilight Council or a Robo that or a Stargate that I wouldn't expect him to have. Okay, well, is Stargate good on this map? No. Well, it's probably not Stargate, but I could have a response that deals with both Stargate and Dark Templar, or so on and so forth. So you can learn a lot, not just by what you see, not just by seeing the thing you're looking for, but by seeing what's missing that should be there. That's a complicated thing to do, and it takes quite a while before you learn just how much gas someone should have at a timing, which takes practice and understanding of the math to a certain extent. But it's the way the pros usually do it. It's why you see things like a stalker poke at the front just to count how many Marines are there. Because if you don't see Marines that should be there, they're either somewhere else in the base or he doesn't have them. And if he doesn't have them, then that tells you that he's doing something other than producing Marines, which can give you some basic ideas. So that's generally my piece of advice for learning to scout. Were there any other questions? I don't see any at the moment.
I think that's pretty much everything. So.
I agree with Murmur here. After playing Doom on the toaster for so long, it would be hard to go back to a keyboard. That toaster mechanics. I also swear
best
that
toaster
I,
player in the I, world.
I also suspect that after doing that for a while, anytime you went downstairs to actually make toast, you might have like a little bit of fear of like an archdemon coming out after you.
Association. All right, so that pretty much sums it up. So basically the ideas are, if you want to improve, incremental improvement, right? Start off small and gradually add on things. Don't worry about scouting until later, as well as like really super fine decision making. Use whatever is comfortable for you, and make sure that you are sitting comfortably and taking breaks in between games to keep up your mental well-being. Is there anything else I'm missing?
No, we covered. That's the most basic description of what we covered. So.
All right. Okay. Well, we will be back in 2 weeks from now. I don't think we have a topic picked out yet, do we?
We have a list of topics to choose from.
Okay.
We'll announce it within the next day or so.
All right. Sure thing. Yeah, we'll announce it on Twitter, probably. And our Twitter, by the way, if you want to follow us, is at @TLStrategyChat. We'll put that in the chat box for you guys.
Announcing an announcement. We are so esports. If we didn't see if you didn't see our last episode from a couple weeks ago, which featured two exceedingly good map makers who joined us, make sure to check that one out. I know not everyone who watches the show has seen the VOD yet. Because the VODs got uploaded a little bit late due to some other circumstances. But definitely check that one out. We had some excellent map makers on with us. In fact, the map making Bonjois and his buddy, both of whom are amazing, and I was so thankful they would come on with us. So make sure to check that VOD if you hadn't already seen that episode.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys all in 2 weeks. Thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you.